This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Welcome and thank you for tuning in once again, or for the first time perhaps, to Rack Addicts After Hours. This is episode 121. Excellent. You've listened to Ben. Now listen to Pete as he tells us what he's been doing this week.
Well, this week I actually went to the ballet.
The dancey prancy?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I've never been. What's the verdict?
I'd never been before either.
Would you have chosen to go?
I was asked to go and accompany a friend, and I thought, yes, I'll give it a go. At least I can say, well, I've done that. I've been there. So I feel valid that I can pass comment after witnessing it firsthand.
Yes.
In the flesh, so to speak.
Far away.
Well,
sorry. Oh, it's gonna be a juicy one. This, okay,
maybe. Anyway, so we went to the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden, as it's known, just Covent Garden, which is a venue which had a theatre initially in 1732.
Vintage.
And I have read in Wikipedia that the first ballet was held there in 1734.
It's got history then.
Yes. Very, very grand building. I think the auditorium handles something in the region of 3,000.
Oh, yeah.
Very big, very... We were up in the gods a bit.
Nice.
And I don't especially get vertigo, but it was a bit, ooh, this is a bit high.
Didn't want to look over the balcony
much. It's like in some of those theatres where the actual seating is really at a steep angle.
Oh, yeah, yeah, one of those. You feel like you're going to tumble over the edge.
Yeah, there's that feeling that you're going to be pushed forward slightly. The experience was different. I'm not sure if I'll ever repeat it, but it was different.
It
happened. I was there. I saw it. We experienced three separate ballet performances. I think they were all the same company, i.e. the Royal Ballet, but it was segmented. The first one was, I believe, a Russian composer, possibly, and it was more contemporary. So the music was composed in 1944, I believe, and the dancing, although the dancers were dressed in what you describe as typical ballet attire, both the males and the females, the dance was somewhat contemporary. Not really strange, you know, these ones where you see where they're contorting and doing these strange movements. It still looked like the ballet that you expect, but with that kind of quite contemporary classical music. It was thing, and that was 25 minutes, and it did go reasonably quickly. The second one was much more of a story. I can't remember the composer, but it was late 18th century,
right?
And it was a kind of Victorian stroke Edwardian kind of melodrama, if you want to put it in that way. In the respect that was a gentleman with a younger wife, and then there was a sort of a young pretender who was, I think he was the tutor to their son.
Right.
And the wife fell in love with the tutor. In fact, all the women in the play fell in love with the tutor, and there was a lot of unrequited love happening.
Yes.
So there was a gist of a story, which there hadn't been with the first one. The first one was just formation leaping.
Formation leaping. Gotcha.
And the final one, again, I don't remember the piece, but if you heard the tune, you'd mostly go, that one. And again, that was storyless as such, and there was lots of leaping. So I generally got the gist that it was all about the leaping and the pivoting and the twirling and that type of thing. I can appreciate the athleticism of the dancers, but on the whole, it really wasn't my cup of tea.
Gotcha. Dancing is something that has confused me for quite some time. I think it all stems from one time when I watched a video of some kind of modern choreography with the sound turned off. So I was there witnessing a video of some people flailing around in a rather strange manner for no apparent reason. And since then, I can't take dancing seriously in any shape or form. It goes without saying that I don't dance at all. I'm physically, rhythmically challenged.
Well, I had the unerring feeling, and I have to apologise to many of our international listeners because they may not get this reference.
Okay.
But I felt that any minute now the two Ronnies were going to come on.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe for our US listeners, the best analogy maybe, I thought it was going to turn into a SNL Saturday Night Live type of sketch or something any minute now, because they were sort of taking themselves so seriously, you just felt that something was going to happen. Yeah. But alas, it didn't. It just remained the leaping and the twirling.
The leaping and the twirling. The ladies in my family are into their ballet. I think they go every year around Christmas time with a family friend, and they've tried to explain it to me, and it's not worked.
There definitely seems to be an allure for the ladies, although there were many males attending in the audience. It was, I assume it's quite a cultured audience. To be honest, people regard ballet as a bit of an elitist type of entertainment, do they? Because I would imagine that 5, 6, 7% of the country don't like ballet particularly, or certainly don't go to the ballet. It's only for a certain few.
I would guess that opera falls into a similar category.
Yes, but I was informed yesterday that the opera crowd are different to the ballet crowd.
Interesting. There is cliques.
Yes.
Strange in the fine art areas of the world.
I did spend a lot of time gazing into the orchestra pit, trying to decide whether they were mic'd up or not, or how they were projecting the sound, because it's a big sound in a big auditorium, but it was really clear. But that could be just the way the auditorium has been designed to allow it to percolate around the audience.
That is something that I would really like to see. I've never been to a show with a big, full-on professional orchestra.
It wasn't a massive orchestra. I have seen large orchestras on several other occasions. They did have, for two of the pieces, a pianist. Anyway, at the end, where they were taking their bows, and there was a lot of it, they really laid that on thick, because they did that, and everyone was freaking out, and then the curtain closed, and then it sort of opened slightly ajar, and the principal dancer would come on and sort of wave around and point at things and go off, and then somebody else would come on, and that went on for quite a time, which the audience seemed to appreciate for whatever reason. But with the two pieces with the pianist, pianist also went up there and took a lot of applause as well, because they were very predominant in the particular music that was being played.
So, a new experience for Pete.
Yes, I can say that I've done it and I've ticked that one off, and I seriously doubt whether I'll ever go again.
Wouldn't be my choice. Any more from your week?
Not really. That's sort of dominated, because there was so much logistics to get up there for me personally, and everything surrounding it. It sort of dominated most of this week.
Gotcha. Right. I have a review to read for you. But here we have another ModCaf attendee. Rufus has listened to the Rack Addicts of the 18th of April. I can't remember which episode that is. And he said he really enjoyed it. Really, in all caps. And he said, Pete, your pond story, I'm quoting here, made me schnortle wine everywhere. So I think that's a success. Brilliant stuff. Thank you for listening, Rufus. And I hope you enjoy this one and the next one. And the next one you will never leave.
Well, I truly hope that possibly our little conversations that we have on a weekly basis are just as entertaining for our other listeners.
Yeah, I hope you're all enjoying yourselves. And thank you for staying. Thank you very much for tuning in. My week has also been dominated by a something, and it was a work something, not massively exciting, a big live streaming event which went a lot better than I thought it would, mostly on the stress front. But there were some cool bits. I was sort of the front of house engineer, sound desk man for that, which is nice because it's the only thing I am actually qualified to do in the job that I do. So it was cool, a bit of vindication for how I've spent my time in education. And a couple of the more satisfying bits of preparation. I mentioned the misery of certain RJ45 connections to you, but I haven't spoken about that on the podcast, have I?
No.
No. Well, I did some Ethernet or RJ45 terminations and was having a good time doing the standard thin stuff that Ethernet cables are normally made from. I think that was just some Cat5. But then my colleague said, hey, Ben, can you shove a terminal on this Cat6 outdoor rugged shielded horribleness? And I thought, oh yeah, it'd be fine. I've practiced, I've done a few, it's going well. Now, let me tell you, it sucked. So, not only was it thicker in its external diameter, but each of the strands were thicker, so more difficult to shove through the connector and get it to work properly. But also, it was filled with goo.
Goo?
Yeah, goo.
What kind of goo?
Goo. Something Alex thought it was for shock-absorbing purposes.
Quite possibly, especially if it's a ruggedized outdoor cable.
It's that kind of thing.
Did it have a kind of plastic core that separated some of the strands?
The little plus sign-shaped thing. Yeah, it had that as well.
Yeah, it's, all the Cat 6 sort of has that.
Yeah, it was... obviously, we had a continuity testing device for those cables, and I did two ends after much swearing and faffing around, and I did not achieve continuity, so I then gave up. It wasn't that fun. But what was amazing fun was doing some custom foam for some flight cases for a bunch of Blackmagic adapters. I was just sitting there doing the little, you know, the pre-cubed foam, just doing some of that. That was nice.
There's something strangely satisfying about picking away at those little cubes.
It was great. I love doing that. More of that, please. And there we are. That has been my week, so not a huge amount, but we do have a good chunk of synth news to talk about today. And there's sad news that we've already had before. Mutable Instruments are saying goodbye again. So, another announcement from Emily Gillette or something, saying no further development and slowly discontinuing what is left. Primarily, well, I think last time it was partially a bit of a lack of interest in that particular field. I think it's the same again, and also frustrations with wanting to predict supply chains and all this kind of stuff. So, here's the quote. "I won't design new modules, and production is progressively stopping. Modules are marked as discontinued when the last shipment is sent to dealers. I can't predict when it happens, as it depends on how fast a batch is made and how fast it gets sold. It might happen in a week, a month, or in a quarter. There is no Easter egg, no plot twist, no teaser. So, could be curtains. At the moment, we are left with..." This is as of the 27th of the 4th, 2022, "we have beads, blades, veils, ripples, plaits, tides, and stages remaining."
Well, I shall be buying a beads after we finish this podcast.
Okay.
Just in case.
Why did that turn up on your radar? Or are you thinking, ooh, investment opportunity?
No, I was planning to get one, but was procrastinating about it. And I've learned that one shouldn't procrastinate, because if you don't move quick enough, suddenly they're not available. And especially if they are being discontinued. I would imagine, though, everything is open source and third parties will still continue making.
Absolutely. So I'm not worried about being able to get your hands on the designs, but it is a shame that such a famous and well-respected module manufacturer may well be going away again.
Potentially lost the...
the thing.
The thing.
The passion. But, yeah, the third-party people will still keep us happy with our classic designs.
Yeah, so that beads will be going in my basket in about 40 minutes to an hour.
Wonderful stuff. So, the big news. Now, we'll save the big news. Let's come back to that. Let's go to the very tiny and cheap news. A sort of, it's another, ooh, what's Behringer done now? This is a Clark Technic effects processor in a module. Have you seen this?
I did, and I saw a demo, and it was the Behringer video that I saw it on.
Mm. Yes, indeed. $49, apparently, for 24-bit stereo digital effects. Potentially, the speculation is that it's the same that's in the Odyssey, the Behringer version of the Odyssey, which... they're kind of fine, but for, 49 squiddly boys, Eurorack effects, stereo.
I note it's described as a multi-effects processor.
Yes.
But not simultaneously.
No, just means it has multiple available.
So you'd have to buy a few of them.
If you wanted multiple effects. I guess it's just the same kind of deal as...
quite a lot.
Effects aid.
Yes.
And other things like that. You see how long it took me to remember any of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'll be a thing. Will it fall apart instantly? Maybe. Maybe it'll be amazing. Who knows? But $49, you can't go wrong, potentially. And now, to the opposite end of the spectrum, there's that new teenage engineering boyo, the TX6 field mixer and audio interface. Of course, USB-C audio interfacing, portable mixing, built-in DSP and lots of cool stuff. Seems very well thought out, will be most likely very well made, and it does look pretty cool. What are the interesting bits that we've got there? 8 built-in effects, EQs, compressors, 6 channels, 3.5mm inputs with some very expensive cables if you want them. Yeah, stuff. But the most exciting thing is, how much do you reckon it costs? Oh, we're working in dollars this time.
Okay, someone did tell me how much it was, and it was a lot, but I'm
cheating.
I have forgotten, but I'm going to just go for it. I'm going to say $600.
Pete, that's a poor guess.
Go
double
on.
It.
$1,200.
1,199 big buckaroonies.
Ouch.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Do you think anyone's actually going to buy one?
Oh, yeah. Of course they will. It does have alternative modes. I believe you can turn it into a synthesizer or a drum machine or something if you feel like it.
Mm. Have you got a picture there that you can show
me? Yes, I can. Let me spin my laptop around.
It's tiny.
It is very small.
What format is that?
It's not, really. Just handheld CNC aluminium enclosure.
For $1,200.
For $1,200. And it's got 6 3.5mm inputs and 1/4-inch stereo output. So no balanced anything anywhere, which is a shame.
Good grief. I know some people will buy them, but I can't imagine many people will at that price.
No. I mean, apart from its ridiculously small size and rechargeability, it's not doing anything groundbreaking.
I mean, for that sort of money, you could buy yourself an SSL 6 or something.
Oh, yeah, you could. Although, only really has two full channels. The rest are all just direct inputs with a level. But still. Well, we do like to point and laugh at them sometimes, but we could be proven wrong. Who knows? Right. Create Audio. We're on the podcast last week for the Nifty Keys, the keyboard and Eurorack case combo. And they've collaborated with your favourite module manufacturer. Maybe they're your favourite. I don't know. Pittsburgh. To make a function generator, as if we needed another one. But they said, we hate how all of these function generators are really complicated, trying to do lots of things, and they never end up being actually that amazing or easy to use at those things. Apparently, I think maths is fairly comprehensive, and its ubiquity would back me up, I think. But here we are. It's called Function Junction. You have three sections, which is an ADSR with a long mode and a loop button. You have a function, more typical function generator section, with your attack decay curve and modifier, which I think is linked with some other sections of the module, with a loop sustain mod button. You then have an LFO with a rate control and attenuverters for the outputs, so you can have them individually or mixed, as well as a few other choice bits and pieces for about $200. It's another option in the already crowded corner of Eurorack worldiness. But there we are. It's
so
available.
What brand is it being sold under?
Create Audio.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Indeed. It's there if you want it.
What facet of that has been facilitated by Pittsburgh, do you think?
Or is I think pretty much the design of the circuitry and stuff. Create Audio went, here's the thing. Here's a sort of panel layout that we like. Figure it out. I think that's the relationship there.
Okay.
Lastly, the big one, Electron, the big boys, have dropped another square box, much in the format of the Digitact and the other one. What's it called?
The FM one.
Yeah, Digitone. Digitone. Yeah. There we go. So, it is the Syntact, and it is kind of a combination of analog rhythm and model cycles. You have 12 tracks of exciting stuff. I believe 4 of those will be analog voices, the rest will be digital, and then there will be your usual effects, sequencing, MIDI capability, multi-trackable, overbridginess, really great build quality, certain workflow that you may or may not like or love. But it's a cool box and sounds pretty much as great as you'd expect for this kind of thing. So, you have, for the digital tracks, you have 10 selectable machines, they call them, and your selectable machines are bass drum, snare drum, cymbal or hi-hat, percussion, clap, and 4 tonal synth options. 2 snare drums.
I've only got one question.
Mm.
Has it got a song mode?
That was my question as well, and I googled it, and I can't remember if I found out, so I'm going to have to google that again. You've got, on the analog side, the analog rhythm stuff, you have one channel that can only be cymbals, and the other 3 can be a few different, I think 6 different bass drums, 4 snare drums, 2 rim shots, 1 dual VCO synth. There's impulse, I don't know what that is, noise generator, those are your options there. But it's pretty cool, pretty cool. Should you want it? Should you want it? Right, now, song mode question, because this is everybody's problem with the
Digitech,
the square ones. Okay, I don't know. Let's see if there's a manual out for it, shall we? There is a user manual. Now I can do the old Command F, since I'm on Mac, and find song. Nothing. What else might it be called? Chain. Okay, there is a section in the manual called Chains. Let us investigate. It's on page 40-something. 44. There's no song mode. it's the same pattern chaining thing that you've got on the other square ones, where you can't save them and they will be lost when you turn the thing off.
Absolutely pointless.
So now, if you want this kind of stuff, but you want a song mode, you're going to have to go buy an analog rhythm or an analog 4 or an octatrack and a model cycles. And then you've basically got the same functionality. Disappointing.
Yeah, I just really can't understand it. I know that with the Digitech, there was a lot of emphasis on live performance in the moment, tweaking and so forth. But how hard could it be just to have a song mode?
I don't know. But I guess they're still kind of using that as a push to their bigger boxes. That's all that makes sense to me. I wonder if... there's definitely room in the market for somebody to go, hey, I can make a small box that can store chains and do it via MIDI for the Electron boxes. I wonder if somebody would do that. You could easily make that in like Max for Live or something.
Well, that was what I was hoping for with the 1010 Music Black Box, which it does to a certain degree, but it's lacking in other areas.
Yeah.
The Digitech is, I think, superior in a lot of ways, but the lack of song mode really
kills it
for me. The only other option I've been thinking about is the MPC One, which is much more capable.
Yes, indeed.
And around about the same price.
Yeah, it is quite mad how something... Well, especially if you're comparing it to the 1010, which is so small.
Yeah.
Because they're all about the same price, like 600 odd.
Yeah, they're in that
aren't
ballpark,
they?
Aren't they?
Yeah.
They're all north of 500.
As annoying as it is, I do really, really like the Square Electron things. I think they're so cool. They feel great.
Yeah, the physicality, the tactility of the buttons, etc. They are really nice.
Definitely.
You just hope. I mean, I have got this vain hope that they're suddenly going to release a firmware update for the Digitech that suddenly produces a song mode.
Have you still got yours?
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Well, there you go. The Syntact. It was another one of those releases where everybody had had them for ages anyway, and they all released their videos at once. So there's plenty out there, including our favourites, Loopop, and I do like Andrew Huang's videos just for the music that he makes sometimes. Yeah, go check them out.
And we had piles and piles of them in the shop, and they sold.
Pre-sold,
immediately.
Yeah. How many is piles and piles, do you reckon?
I don't know the exact amount. I only saw about 10 or 12.
That would have been just in the shop.
Yeah, and that was just after the sort of rush. So I think there was potentially a lot of pre-sales, but I think I got the gist that everything was embargoed. So when was the actual release? On the Friday? Because we recorded the podcast on Thursday, and there was just rumours. But by Friday, there was every YouTuber that does reviews on that type of equipment had or seemed to have a video featuring that product.
April 21st, it was released. What day was that?
I think that's the Thursday, possibly.
Yeah, it was the Thursday. So it would have been hours after we recorded the podcast.
Later on after the podcast.
Well, there it is. If you want it. Now, that's it. We're done. We've finished. It's the end of another episode, but not before the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And I'm going to jump in with one because this was cool. I stumbled upon it when I shouldn't have been scrolling through YouTube, doom scrolling, as it always tends to be. And it's not the kind of video that I would go looking for, but I thoroughly enjoyed its 16-minute duration. It is a channel called Science Click English. Science Click, one word, with no K on the end of click. And it's just simply entitled String Theory. And it's wonderfully animated and well-narrated, and the top comment sums it all up. This is literally the most informative, well-illustrated, easiest-to-understand videos on string theory I've ever seen. It was great. I didn't know anything about string theory, apart from there were two words that turned up next to each other in physics-y, scientific-y, universe-origin-y type standard model-y related discussions, but it was great. Go watch it. String Theory on the Science Click English YouTube channel. Pete, what have you got this week?
As usual, I have a YouTube channel, and this is one that I've been meaning to talk about for some weeks. It is another PBS channel. This one is called Storied, and it's described as Storied is the home of arts and humanities shows from PBS Digital Studios. And the particular submissions that caught my eye were ones on word taxonomy.
I don't actually know what taxonomy means.
I assume it's something to do with this history and the origins and basically all the information that surrounds the usage of that word.
Right, what does the internet say? The branch of science concerned with classification, especially of organisms, systematic. So, yeah, family tree-like evolutionary species-type relationships.
Anyway, the particular set of videos that appear on this YouTube channel that caught my eye were ones concerning word taxonomy.
Mm.
And they are hosted by Erica Brozowski, PhD. So mm-hmm. she should know what she's talking about. So I assume her specialist subject is the English language and its history and et cetera, et cetera. So I found them very interesting and it is certainly worth a watch. There are quite a few other videos by other presenters that deal with slightly different topics. On the whole, it's quite an informative and interesting channel. As usual, none of the videos are particularly long and they are easy to watch and very digestible.
Wonderful stuff.
Potentially come away with some new factoids.
Ah, yes. Do love a factoid, me.
Anyway, so that's my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel called Storied.
Wonderful stuff. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to everybody's favourite music and technology podcast. We'll catch you in the next one. Farewell.